You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
So listen to this.
Charlie Puth.
No. I heard from
who is in town tonight, by the way.
Welcome to our fine city, Charles.
No. Before we go on, tell everybody. First of all, there were two things that were said in here during the news break, Dan.
Yeah.
That bear repeating. Number one, three I hate yous.
Right.
Because I told Johnny about the fountain that she has put a bid on that's going to cost God knows how much money to crane and get to the house when she wins in less than 4 hours. Is that correct?
Yes, it's like 3 hours and 54.
Let's get those phones ringing, people.
Okay. It's not phones you need. And then the other thing, she looks at me and she goes, with a straight face, she goes, I don't understand it. Why I hate the name Puth so much.
I don't like it. It's just a word that I don't like, and I don't know why.
It's the ooh sound.
I think it's the ooh melded with the P. He's a brilliant artist, and he's in town, and we welcome him to our fine city. And today, I got a text, speaking of brilliant and coming to our fine city, from my former work husband, Ralph Hipp, my very first co-anchor in Topeka at WIBW. He'd been there for years and years and years and years. And Ralph said to me, hey, would you like to interview the great, the legend, the journalist, capital J, Bill Curtis?
Yes, please.
And I just wrote back, now, when, what, yeah, we can we get him in studio? So listen to this. This is from Bill Curtis's Facebook page. On Monday, June 8th, join the Kansas Book Festival for, quote, a night for the history books, featuring a conversation, he writes, between me and WIBW's Melissa Bruner, who was there when I was there too, news anchor there.
She's been there forever.
This special event marks 60 years to the day since the historic broadcast of the deadly 1966 Topeka tornado. Do we have the audio, Sam?
I'm trying to find the original audio. There's tons of people talking over the audio.
So for those of you who don't remember, this was prior to my time, but this is an iconic, infamous moment in broadcast history where he was working that night at WIBW. And, you know, before all the fancy radar and maps that we have today, they knew that the atmosphere was ripe for a tornado. And sure enough, the monster of all monster wall tornadoes comes down. The one that didn't go over Burnett's Mound and it wiped out the city. It wiped out Washburn University. You name it, it was gone in Topeka. And he was on the air that night and saved God knows how many lives because what he saw, he knew it was bad. And his famous or infamous line that he's been known for his entire life, he said, for God's sake, take cover.
Wow. Wow.
It will be 60 years since that historic broadcast at WIBW. And the book signing is June 8th. Doors open at 5:30 at the Washburn Memorial Union Ballroom. We're going to try to piggyback on that and get him in studio maybe 2 o'clock.
Oh, I would love that.
That would give him plenty of time to get out of here and get to Topeka.
Am I allowed to ask him about Anchorman or not?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
He did play a role in Anchorman. But I think
he was the narrator.
Because he's here for the historic anniversary of that deadly tornado.
We'll talk about that first.
Yeah, maybe we don't yuck it up right out of the gate with Mr. Curtis.
But then we get to Anchorman.
Yeah.
Okay.
Serious journalist. So,
capital J.
I am a serious journalist.
No, I'm talking about Mr. Curtis.
Mr. Curtis left Topeka, correct me if I'm wrong, Dan Weinbaum, and went to Chicago.
That is correct.
Where he
within 6 months of that broadcast, by the way.
Oh, it was.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? And I don't quite remember, it's been such a long time, but I don't quite remember the circumstances that led him to be on the air that night. I just remember he was very new, he was very measured, he was very calm, and he saved countless lives with that utterance of, for God's sakes, take cover.
All right, so we'll try to get him on the air.
Efforting.
Would love to have him. Here are the 10 U.S. states where you are most likely to die alone.
Oh, God, that's a depressing stat.
Would you care to guess any of them?
Why are we dying alone?
Because people are not getting married.
Mm-hmm. There's no drive to court a woman anymore.
What did you just say?
I don't know.
To court a woman? Yeah, is it the southern states, Scott?
No.
People have been dying by themselves for a very long time.
You would be shocked how many people, what percentage of people in these states never, ever get married. Ever.
Okay, so you're not talking die alone because I'm widowed and my wife passed 10 years ago.
No, you're dying alone.
Because you've always been alone.
Oh. Bingo.
Alaska.
No.
Illinois.
No.
Washington.
Oh. No.
I got nothing.
Come on. New York. New York. Number one. 36.3% of people in the state of New York never get married.
36%?
Ever. Get married.
Colorado.
No.
California.
No.
Connecticut.
All right, I'm going to put you guys out of your misery.
From Arkansas.
I got nothing.
No. Arkansas, they marry their cousins.
I mean, Scott Parks.
Sorry. Sorry.
Well, they have to share the tooth.
That is not. Stop it. That is not true anymore.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not. Go ahead.
Number 10 is Florida.
Ooh.
26% of Floridians never get married.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Number 9 is Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Number 8 is Delaware. Number 7 is Louisiana. Number 6, Massachusetts, where 30% of Massachusettsians never get married. Rhode Island, 31% never get married. Nevada, 32%.
All that Sin City.
Mm-hmm. You can drive right on through and get married mm-hmm. there if you want to.
Hawaii, 33%. And New Mexico, also 33%. Would you care to guess the states where you are most likely to get married?
Kansas.
Utah. Number 6.
Utah, definitely. Utah.
You guys are boosting the numbers in Kansas.
Oh, my gosh. Sam! That is enough. That is enough.
Like a full-on Kansas spreadsheet.
All right, cut it out, both of you. Kansas is number 6. Utah, by the way, is number 2.
Okay. There's something that beats Utah.
Alabama.
Any of those Bible Belt states, mm-hmm.
yeah.
No. Is Missouri on there?
Not in the top 14.
All right, last guess, Mississippi.
And by the way, these are states where you are most likely to get married.
Virginia.
Virginia is for lovers.
West Virginia is number 11.
Okay.
Iowa.
The state where you are most likely to get married is Idaho. Hmm.
Idaho.
Huh.
It is beautiful there.
Followed by Utah, North Dakota, Wyoming, Iowa, Kansas, and Nebraska.
Oh, Nebraska.
A lot of northern tier western states.
A lot of western states, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Not much else to do.
Oh, Daniel, no.
That's why we get married so much.
Right.
Just get bored.
Good God.
Just like you're talking about before, talking about the, you know, lacking the fun.
913-586-7798. Dana Wright, Sam Stevie the Third. My name is Scott Parks. Here on KMBZ. Sad news out of the NBA, where Jason Collins, a longtime NBA center who became the first man to come out as openly gay in any of America's 4 leading professional sports leagues, died yesterday.
He's so young, too.
From brain cancer. He was 47 years old. Quoting here from the NBA, Jason changed lives in unexpected ways and was an inspiration to all who knew him and to those who admired him from afar. Mm. In 2013, Collins made history through an essay in Sports Illustrated. He had been mulling whether to go public since 2011. And he wrote in that essay, "I am a 34-year-old NBA center. I am black. I am gay." He was the first.
He struggled with whether to come out publicly for 4 years. Mm. I hope we are past that. Update out of Fort Collins, Colorado from the Associated Press. Workers at Denver International, quote, missed the security breach by the man who scaled a perimeter fence, then crossed the runway where he was struck and killed in a fiery collision by a plane with 230 people on board. The runway fatality underscores the longstanding challenge of, quote, keeping intruders out of major airports. Denver International, if you're curious, sprawls 53 square miles, that is twice the size of Manhattan, mm-hmm. on an open prairie northeast of the city center. The 41-year-old trespasser triggered an alarm as he crossed into the airport in the remote area 2 miles from the terminal, but security personnel mistakenly attributed the alarm to a herd of deer that was also nearby. The airport didn't find out about the intruder until after the pilot notified the control tower that the plane had hit someone. And I asked Scott during a break, how is anyone supposed to stop anyone from scaling a perimeter fence, let alone one outside of Denver that I did not know until now was 53 square miles?
Well, not to mention that particular airport has been the base of conspiracy theories for years because of the fencing around it. 8 feet tall with like 2.5 to 3 feet of barbed wire.
So where's the conspiracy theory?
About what's really in the airport.
Oh, come on.
I'm not going there. I was just saying that fence is insane. It has been the butt of jokes for a long time.
Short of making the fence electric.
Yes, I agree, which you can't do.
Why?
Well.
Why?
I don't know.
Don't touch it.
The camera
we'll
view.
Put signs everywhere.
The camera view was alternating between wildlife, the deer, yeah. and the individual. There are some ditches in the area, so the person was out of view a bit as well. I hope they're not trying to blame this on airport staff. That airport is 53 square miles. Someone hell-bent mm-hmm. on getting over that fence. What would they have done if they had seen, they saw the alarm, realized it wasn't deer, it was a guy? It took him, what, a minute and a half to cross into the path of that plane?
Well,
what are you going to do? What are you going to shoot him?
It took him a lot longer than that to walk 2 miles.
You shut down the airport. You have to. Either you make the fence electric, or if you get an indication through whatever sort of technology you're using that there is a human being on the property that doesn't belong there. Hell, I would shut it down for the deer.
The man
How
crossed.
How did the deer get in there?
Listen to this. The man crossed 650 feet. From the fence to the runway, 650 feet.
So it wasn't 2 miles.
No, I don't think so. I think, Sam, he hopped over the fence, and I thought within a minute and a half or 2 minutes.
That's a tenth of a mile.
He was there inside the perimeter for only 2 minutes before he was struck.
By the way, 36 miles of fencing to run a charge through that.
Yeah.
Very expensive.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
It would end up killing birds and wildlife.
Well, near an airport. If it's killing birds, good. I mean, they go into an engine, you're going down.
Airport declined to provide details on their procedures for dealing with trespassers or how often they enter its grounds. My guess is that is a federal crime if you're caught.
Yes.
Correct.
And I can't imagine that they're trying to blame airport staff here.
No. But can we go back to my original question? How did the deer get in there?
Again, I don't know, 8 foot tall fence with 3 to 4 feet of barbed wire on the top.
If I saw a deer jump 8 feet, I wouldn't even be mad. I'd be impressed.
12 feet.
Listen to this.
Whatever.
Trespassers breaching airport perimeters is, quote, a regular problem. Quoting here from security expert Jeff Price, who was an assistant director of security at Denver in the 90s. That airport is surrounded by 36 miles of perimeter fence, which airport officials say is continuously inspected. The vast majority of airport trespassers are intoxicated.
No.
Or, quote, simply messing around just to see if they can do it, adding they typically don't pose a threat.
Let me ask you this.
Oh, here we go, Sam. Denver also gets the rare individual who jumps the fence seeking to prove a long-running conspiracy theory that there's a UFO base at the airport.
Told you there's conspiracy theories.
Why does the airport need to be that big? You just said 56 miles of fencing.
The airport is 53 square miles. It's larger than the city of Manhattan.
36 miles of fencing.
36 miles. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a lot of fencing.
It has to be because you can't have anything around it. The airport, that's why KCI is where it is. It has to stand alone.
But I guarantee you that they don't have 36 miles of fencing around KCI.
I don't know.
I'd bet a paycheck on that.
But, Scott, you're asking questions that lead to the conspiracy theories.
I know.
By the way, KCI is 16.7 square miles.
So that is a third of what Denver is.
Yeah.
Okay. A young woman will have both of her legs amputated after they bent at a 45-degree angle upwards.
Oh, my God. Why? Why do we need to know this?
Because it's in the news.
This way? This way?
No, that way.
Why?
Megan Dixon, who is 21, has been left with unbearable constant pain for the past 8 years when her legs were fixed completely straight. She suffers from functional neurological disorder, FND, has bewildered doctors who have not been able to find a cause for her condition.
It's because she needs a priest, not a doctor. It sounds like an exorcism.
Wait. You've been waiting all week to say that.
I have.
Her knees bend. Help. I don't want to look up a photo.
Your knees bend back. Hers bend forward. And when I say bend, I mean are permanently stuck that way.
Oh, my.
Think so, she's an ostrich.
God.
She's in a human wheelchair, body. And her feet are
up.
Up.
Well, I think the only humane thing to do is to amputate.
Mm-hmm.
She could have a life, right? With prosthetics, I'm not saying it wouldn't be difficult, but it's not that.
She became ill when she was 13 years old, suffering from whooping cough. A year later, she found her legs began to stop working, and she has not walked since. She was diagnosed with something I can't pronounce, and her legs locked straight. Mm.
I couldn't imagine.
Where is she from?
Hang on, let me see here. She's from England.
Okay.
Yep, Cambridgeshire.
Mm-hmm. Cambridgeshire.
When we get back, some parents are now telling their kids, no movies, no TV. We're done.
They done with the cell phone too?
I don't know. 913-586-7798. 586-7798 here on Dana and Parks. So, Sam deep dove the Denver International Airport.
He deep dove Denver.
And some of the theories coming out of why people are jumping over the fence, and you know, there's some sort of there's a conspiracy theory that says that there are UFOs on the site or whatever. But a lot of these theories date back to the Nazis.
Yeah.
And one of the things that you told us during the break, Sam, is mm-hmm. that the runways at Denver International form a swastika.
You've got to be kidding me.
Oh, no, they do.
It's a bit of a stretch. I mean, it's not a swastika in the perfect formation of a swastika, and I use perfect in air quotes. But it is true if you look at the runways, and there are four. Well, there's more than four, but...
They go down and right, left and up, up and over, right and down.
The runways do form a very...
You would think when the architects were getting together to form the layout, someone would have said, hey, I know this was an accident. However, mm-hmm. could we maybe reconfigure?
Hmm.
They've also keyed the conspiracy theorists on the orientation of... the barbed wire on the top of the fence. So typically when you know, go to like a car lot or some place that has barbed wire fencing, it's pointing outward. At the Denver airport, for whatever reason, it's pointing inward, like you're trying to keep something in. Anyway.
Like aliens?
It's just very interesting. It's there's a lot of conspiracy theories surrounding the Denver airport.
Okay. Story here from the New York Post where they profile a gal by the name of Carly.
Okay.
In 1995, 14-year-old Carly called it a wrap on movies. While other teens lined up to see blockbusters like Clueless and Jumanji, an earlier movie outing to see a fantasy sci-fi flick called Powder sent Carly over the ledge. She is now 45 years old.
I remember that movie.
Quoting here from Carly, I do not. It was just so cheesy. She lives in Carrollton, Virginia. She spoke with the New York Post. I thought, I'm done. I'm not watching movies anymore. Why am I watching people on TV live a life and getting so invested in that when I could go live mine?
Okay.
Since that day, she has shunned TV and films forever.
Wait, she made that decision when she was a kid and still at age 45 is like, nope, not for me?
And when she became a mom herself, decided to extend that discipline to her children.
Oh, those poor kids.
But unlike many parents who focus on limiting social media or smartphone use, Carly takes it a step further for her two boys who are aged 8 and 9, eliminating TV, streaming, and video games entirely.
You don't think there's some good, some educational component in some theatrical performances?
Of course I do.
I mean, I'm telling you, I have learned so much over the years watching a good movie, and I mean a good historical fiction. You can learn.
Absolutely. And it can, and often is, entertaining.
But now, she does have a fair point with how far it's gotten.
Jumanji and Powder were not at the top of the Oscar winners that year, if you know what I mean.
We have people that, you know, circle their entire lives around secret lives of Mormon wives.
That's awful.
Real Housewives of pick your rich neighborhood.
Now, the average American child watches 7.5 hours of screen time a day. That's not necessarily TV.
Okay.
More often than not, it probably isn't TV. But that's Instagram or your phone or your tablet or whatever, 7.5 hours a day.
How many people would know who Oscar Schindler was without the movie Schindler's List?
Not very many.
That he saved all of those people.
I'm somebody who studies World War II history, in particular the European theater. And I did not know who Schindler was until that movie came out.
But I don't think we're talking about educational films or films that can teach us life lessons. I think we're talking about using the television or streaming in a mind-numbing nature
she says she got rid of all of it, Sam. Mm-hmm. Why throw the baby out with the bathwater?
When she was 14 years old.
Why not watch documentaries? Those are great. They're shorter than the average cinema flick.
Biased.
You can learn something sometimes. My octopus teacher was not biased. It was just about a guy that went down and befriended an octopus.
Did you have to ask the octopus how it felt?
No. I did not, Sam. I think people like Fair that point. Are weird. I mean, didn't we all go to school with the one person who wasn't allowed to watch TV or wasn't allowed to eat candy ever? And there's always the one kid that like,
whatever. My buddy was that guy. He did not watch hardly any movies or any television growing up. And to this day, like if he comes over to hang out and there's a movie on, do not try to talk to him because he is glued to that television.
Because he's never been able to experience it?
However, he also can quote, he can watch a movie one time and 8 years later tell you the entire plot, quote the whole thing. It's crazy. Like, I think that our brains really aren't meant to have that much information.
That much content.
Yeah.
I can't remember their last names, but there was a... Two teenagers, brother and sister, who lived in a place where I'm not allowed to talk about. And one night my parents decided to go out on a date night. And they asked this couple if they would be willing to babysit my brother and me.
Yeah.
And so we go over to their house, extremely religious, not that there's anything wrong with that, but there was no TV allowed.
Oh.
No nothing.
Certainly no HBO.
Well, over there, you didn't have HBO. Mm. You had one channel, AFN, Armed Forces Network. And we were over there, and from 8 to 9:30 was Bible reading time.
Oh, okay.
And so, not that my brother and I didn't go to church, not that we weren't religious, but we sat down from 8 until 9:30.
That's an hour and a half.
Brian, his name was Brian. I can't remember his sister's name. I know it was an hour and a half, Dana, okay. Because I lived it.
Can I just ask you, and I'm really not trying to be judgy, but you know how I feel about some of this stuff. Is it possible that those kids then grew up to be completely screwed up adults?
Yes. Probably. I have no idea.
I
have no idea where they ended up.
We're not screwed up?
No, I'm not saying we all aren't screwed up. You know, they say normal is just a setting on the dishwasher, right?
Right.
It's been my experience that children who are so lock and key repressed sometimes then tend, when they go off to experience life for the first time in college, they go way the other way.
And I'm not saying that they never watched TV. What I'm saying is that night, they did not watch TV.
Hmm.
And we got to sit down for an hour and a half Bible reading.
Okay.
I believe it was the Old Testament, if I remember correctly.
Praise the Lord.
God bless. And when my mom and dad got home, I begged them, don't ever, ever do that to me again.
Were there any movies growing up that you can remember that your parents absolutely would not let you watch? Because I've got a list of them in my head that all my friends at school had seen, and they would all talk about it, and then you would feel left out because you weren't allowed to watch it because there was probably a nipple in it, and it was rated R.
I would guess, even though I did watch it, my mom would not have approved of 9 1/2 weeks. There was music.
I definitely did not see that.
There was music I was not allowed to listen to.
Porky's.
I saw it, but at a friend's house.
Oh, everyone saw that at a friend's house because no one at your own house would be able to watch it.
With Mrs. Ballbuster?
I don't even remember because I wasn't allowed to watch it, but all my friends talked about it.
Yeah. I was not allowed to listen to Kiss.
Okay.
It was strictly forbidden.
That is the devil.
Kids in Satan's Service.
Uh-huh.
That's what it stands for. My mom truly believed that Kiss stood for Kids in Satan's Service.
Okay.
Ozzy Osbourne was frowned upon
mm-hmm.
and one time thrown out the front door.
Mm-hmm.
Iron Maiden was not particularly popular in my house, even though I hid that record.
Okay.
But movies, not so much. Music, definitely.
What was the one, Fast Times at Ridgemont High? Absolutely not. Was not allowed to watch that.
But you were 8 when that movie came out.
Was I? What time did that? When did that come out?
1982.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a little young. But even later, I was not allowed to watch.
When Spicoli falls out of the van and
I have no idea.
There's marijuana smoke.
I have no idea. I never watched it.
What's his face is taking care of his business in the bathroom and somebody walks in.
No idea. I've never watched it.
I was 7 when Eurotrip came out.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
That's a great movie, by the way.
It's a lot of inappropriate scenes.
You have never seen Fast Times at Ridgemont High?
No.
Dan?
And I'm sure it's horrible.
No, it's a great movie.
I was allowed to watch The Breakfast Club, but that came out way later. I was in
1985. You would have been
middle
11.
School.
You would have been 11. But there were certain scenes in Breakfast Club, like when
I'm aware
when Bender's under the table.
I know. I was allowed to watch Breakfast Club.
Huh?
You know why? No nudity. Think about it.
That is true.
There were sexual references. There were drug references.
You know, I always found it incredible. My mom, God bless her, and I love her dearly. She loves like movies like Seven.
Gory.
Yeah, where there's heads in boxes.
Yeah.
But if you put a boob.
Yeah.
Or even.
That is it.
Or even the hint of sexual activity in a movie. She is turning it off.
Yeah. Even today.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't you go to the theater with her and like...
So it was...
Was it like a horrifying opening scene or something?
It was the Adam Sandler movie...
Uncut Gems.
Thank you.
Okay.
Uncut Gems, where she met me at the theater.
Yeah.
And, I like Adam Sandler.
I still haven't seen that movie, by the way.
I think he's a fun actor.
I think the F-bomb is in that movie like 458
so
times.
I think we were about five We were like 5 minutes in, and the F-bomb had been said 550 times. And my mom just looked at me, tapped me on my knee, and said, I'm going home.
I'm out.
It's a terrible movie. It's not even entertaining.
It's a good... What?
No! 913-586-7798. 586-7798 here on Dana and Parks. Three hours and 7 minutes until we know about the fountain that Dana has been on.
Let you know.
that weighs 500,000 pounds.
By the way, another disclaimer that I found says if it's not picked up by May 26th at 6 p.m.
Plenty of time.
It will be donated without a refund to the winning bidder.
Plenty of time.
So at least they're not going to sue you for not coming to get it.
No, plenty of time.
Donate it.
From our little favorite newspaper, the Johnson County Post. A Kansas City animal activist group has taken out a billboard.
I saw this.
Urging a Shawnee pet store to release their capuchin monkey that it has had for almost 20 years. You drove by this?
Yeah, it's on Shawnee Mission Parkway eastbound right before you get to I-35.
So last week, the group Kansas City Action for Animals unveiled a billboard asking for the pet stop in Shawnee to release Frankie, the capuchin monkey that the store has had in its possession for about 19 years. The billboard's in Marion, like you said, about 1 mile from the pet shop, close to I-35. Mm-hmm. It is sponsored by PETA. It's only on display for a month. After that, the organization will look into a second billboard for June with the help of a group called In Defense of Animals. Quoting here, the billboard is the message that this is not right. This is wrong. You don't keep an intelligent, emotionally complex being in a 10-foot cage for two decades. That is just on its face wrong. And the billboards are literally a representation of that. Quoting here from Amanda Williams, a community activist. There have been protests before. The owner has said again and again and again, the monkey is happy.
So
and it has been in that, you know, where they inherited this monkey or whenever they did, that he's been that way for so long. You can't just take him now and, I don't know, toss him into the trees in the wild.
I'm starting to wonder if they're right. It has a picture of Frankie, I believe, is the name of the monkey.
Yeah.
And it says Frankie belongs in a sanctuary, not in a store. And then underneath it is a picture of Frankie the monkey. To your point, and I know we spoke with somebody last year who was involved in this campaign to, you know, free Frankie, for lack of a better term. How would he function in a sanctuary?
He's never been around other monkeys.
He has not.
He's also never had to forage or hunt for food on his own. And there's a solid chance if he was introduced into a sanctuary because he has never been in the wild, he would be rejected. And what happens when a group of monkeys rejects another monkey?
Doesn't go well.
They kill it.
It doesn't survive. So
here's my question, Sam.
Really,
what needed to happen? Because I think a lot of people are uncomfortable with the idea of the cage. They just are. I am too. What needed to happen is in the very, very beginning, that needed to not be the solution. But we can't go back 20 years, right?
No, but think about the
we
animals.
We should do better moving forward.
But think about all the other animals that we keep in cages. And I'm not saying that they're as smart as Frankie, but
zoos.
If you have a bird, 95% of their life is spent in a cage. If you have any animal other than a cat or a dog, the majority of their life is spent in a cage or in an aquarium or in some kind of confine.
One of these signs says, Frankie belongs in nature, not behind bars. Yeah. Again, I think the time to address that was 19 years ago. I don't know what his life would look like any other way.
913-586-7798. Dan's got the news coming your way in 2 minutes.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at kmbz.com.